Turkish military, which led to the split of the Mediterranean island into Turkish and Greek-ruled parts. It's now day 288 of the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza, and the regime in Tel Aviv continues with its unrelenting air and artillery strikes. In one of the latest strikes, at least three Palestinians were killed and several injured in Israeli bombing of a Palestinian home in the Al Buraij refugee camp in central Gaza. To the south, regime air raid on a residential building in Khan Yunis left a Palestinian dead and several injured. Another Palestinian was killed by an Israeli drone strike targeting his bicycle in Khan Yunis as well. Regimes also targeted several areas throughout Gaza with heavy artillery, leaving an unknown number of casualties. But the overall Israeli genocidal campaign against Gaza, which began last October, has left at least 38,900 Palestinians dead and over 89,000 injured. And earlier, we spoke to our Gaza correspondent, Moti Abu Musabe, from the central city of Deir al-Balah, for your update.
All areas of Gaza Strip are being rained by the Israeli airstrikes and missiles. Here in the central area of Gaza Strip, the Israeli occupation forces committed multiple massacres by destroying several residential buildings in Anusarat refugee camp. Two residential buildings were targeted and destroyed by the Israeli fighter jets, leaving at least 14 Palestinian civilians dead, mostly women and children, as usual. In the meantime, another house was targeted in Al Buraij refugee camp, leaving three Palestinian civilians unalived as a result of the attack. When it comes to Al Maghazi refugee camp, the Israeli occupation forces opened their gunfire towards the eastern parts of the Al Maghazi refugee camp. Here in Deir al-Balah city, a Palestinian civilian was targeted and killed after the Israeli fighter drones attacked him while he was attempting to bring food to his children. He was cut into pieces and brought to the Al-Aqsa Memorial Hospital. The current situation is still tense in the central area of Gaza Strip as the Israeli occupation forces are still intensifying and concentrating their aerial attacks, basically, against multiple and different sections of the middle area of Gaza Strip. Even when it comes to Gaza City, the Israeli occupation forces continue to commit more crimes, whereas a residential building was targeted and destroyed in Sheikh Ridwan neighborhood. At least eight Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed after the Israeli fighter jets targeted and destroyed a residential building over the heads of its residents.
More than 9 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza and has changed the fate of many children in the blockaded strip. In one particular case, doctors managed to bring a baby to life from a mother who had recently been killed in the regime's bombing.
Today, this woman was targeted as she was pregnant in her 9 month, and she was martyred after being targeted by the occupation army. An immediate operation was performed at Auda Hospital after this mother was martyred. The infant is now in the incubator's department, and he started his life as an orphan who has no mother.
Baby's mother was among seven people killed in the regime's airstrike on the Nusayra refugee camp in central Gaza. Doctors delivered her baby, who was suffering from a lack of oxygen after the mother's dead body was brought to the emergency room. Baby's father was also injured and is now still hospitalized together with his newborn at Al-Aqsa Hospital. Doctors say mother had survived a previous airstrike that killed her entire family just 4 months ago. And since Israel's war on Gaza started on October 7th, thousands of Palestinian women and children have been killed and thousands have been forcibly displaced. The International Court of Justice says Israel's practices and policies in occupied Palestine are in grave violation of international law.
The state of Israel's continued presence in the occupied territory is unlawful. By 11 votes to 4, is of the opinion that the state of Israel is under an obligation to bring an end to bring to an end its unlawful presence in the occupied Palestinian territory as rapidly as possible. By 14 votes to 1, is of the opinion that the State of Israel is under an obligation to cease immediately all new settlement activities and to evacuate all settlers from the occupied Palestinian territory. By 14 votes to 1, is of the opinion that the State of Israel has the obligation to make reparation for the damage caused to all natural or legal persons concerned in the occupied Palestinian territory. By 12 votes to 3, is of the opinion that all states are under an obligation not to recognize as legal the situation arising from the unlawful presence of the State of Israel in the occupied Palestinian territory, and not to render aid or assistance in maintaining the situation created by the continued presence of the State of Israel in the occupied Palestinian territory. By 12 votes to 3, is of the opinion that international organizations, including the United Nations, are under an obligation not to recognize as legal the situation arising from the unlawful presence of the State of Israel in the occupied Palestinian territory. By 12 votes to 3, is of the opinion that the United Nations, and especially the General Assembly, which requested this opinion, and the Security Council, should consider the precise modalities and further action required to bring to an end as rapidly as possible the unlawful presence of the State of Israel in the occupied Palestinian territory. By Israel and the Palestine Liberation Organization.
ICJ said Israel has deprived Palestinians from a right to self-determination. The court also says Israel's settlement construction in the occupied West Bank is in breach of the Fourth Geneva Convention. ICJ says the exploitation of natural resources in the Palestinian territory by Israel is in breach of international law as well. Top UN court says despite Israel's military withdrawal back in 2005, the Gaza Strip is still under occupation and Israel must fulfill its obligation as a occupying power. The UN General Assembly had asked for this advisory opinion from the ICJ back in December 2022. It requested the court give its opinion on the legal consequences of Israel's continued violations of the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination. Also, the UN wanted an opinion on Israel's prolonged occupation, its annexation and settlement construction on Palestinian territory occupied since 1967. Palestinian Minister of Foreign Affairs Riyad al-Maliki has urged all states to review bilateral ties with the Israeli regime after the International Court of Justice announced its advisory opinion on Israel's actions in occupied Palestine.
Today is about the brave and noble Palestinian people and their absolute, non-negotiable right to freedom from colonial control and violence. The court said this right must no longer be denied or deferred. The court made clear that the Palestinian people are the only sovereign in the occupied Palestinian territory, including East Jerusalem, and that the international community is under an obligation not just to reaffirm the Palestinian people's right to self-determination, but to see to it that this right is implemented immediately. All states and the UN are now under obligation not to recognize the legality of Israel's presence in the occupied Palestinian territory and to do nothing to assist Israel in maintaining this illegal situation. They are directed by the court to bring Israel's illegal occupation to an end. This means all states and the UN must immediately review their bilateral relations with Israel to ensure their policies do not aid in Israel's continued aggression against the Palestinian people, whether directly or indirectly.
To bring to an end as rapidly as possible.
Hamas also welcomed the ruling in a statement. It said the verdict affirms the illegitimacy of Zionist occupation and has called for its end. With ongoing Israeli violence in Gaza, the West Bank, and Al-Quds, the movement has urged the UN and its Security Council to act on the ruling. And Palestinian authorities also praised the verdict. They said the ruling proves the illegality of Israeli occupation and reaffirms Palestinians' right to self-determination and liberation. The Secretary General of the Palestinian National Initiative, Mustafa Barghouti, also hailed the ruling as a significant victory for the Palestinian cause. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it's carried out a new retaliatory operation against an Israeli target in occupied Palestine. Umbrella Group said it used Al-Arqab cruise missile to hit a military target in the port of Haifa. Iraqi Resistance says the attack was in response to ongoing Israeli massacring of Palestinians, including women, children, and the elderly of Gaza, and has vowed to continue its retaliatory operations in support of Palestinians since Israel began its campaign of genocide last October. Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has carried out fresh retaliatory operations as well against Israeli targets in northern occupied Palestinian territories. In a latest strike, Hezbollah shelled a gathering of Israeli soldiers in the vicinity of the Al-Manara site. Meanwhile, the Israeli military carried out an airstrike in southern Lebanon, targeting a Hezbollah site in the town of Hula. And for more, we're going to swing now over to our Beirut correspondent, Maryam Salih, who's on standby for an update. Hello, Maryam. Good afternoon to you. Hope you're safe and doing well out there in southern Lebanon. What can you tell us?
Well, today seems to be a little bit different. We haven't heard the sounds of overflight since early this morning. And so it's not clear whether this is just some sort of calm, which does happen at some days. But then later on, we see that there are sounds of shelling, there are sounds of drone attacks from the Israelis, as well as overflights from the Israeli surveillance drones, as well as the warplanes. But we do know that since early in the morning, there was one shelling from the Israeli artillery against the town of Hula. Of course, Hula is a bordering town. It is one of the towns that has been almost completely destroyed. Many of the residential neighborhoods have also been targeted many times. And there were even martyrs that fell in the past few months as a result of the shelling on that town specifically. Up until now, we don't have reports coming out from other bordering towns of other Israeli aggressions or strikes on those areas. And we do know that Hezbollah has launched one operation so far. I think you mentioned it, but we know that from the Israeli media that sirens are sounding in the area of Al-Dagajar, which is partially occupied by the Israelis. It's considered a Lebanese town, but there were also sirens sounding in the Galilee Panhandle, several kibbutz, and some of these kibbutz are Dan, Defna, and as well as Shi'ari Ashur. And so those kibbutz areas, those colonial settlements, as the Lebanese call them, could be perhaps under drone attacks from Hezbollah's drones, which is something that the Israelis have so far been incapable of not only detecting, but stopping when they want to reach their objective. And here we're talking about something which is really a significant point of strength. The Israelis are using billions of dollars worth of rockets, whether from the Iron Dome system and even from their warplanes, to attempt to stop Hezbollah's drones. That it seems to be like sort of a mouse and cat chase, actually, when we see the warplanes flying to try to stop the drones. However, the drones continue with their flights, and they reach their target very precisely. We saw this in many instances, in addition to the fact that we saw that Hezbollah came back with surveillance videos from their drones without being detected at all by the Israelis. And so this is also part of the fact that the Israelis are incapable. And this proves that what the Yemenis did with the drone called Yafa, that in itself was very significant. And it is part of the resistance front's attempts, which seems to be successful, to not only weaken the Israeli army more than it is already tired and fatigued, it also uncovers the fact that there is some sort of an illusion that was made to call the Israeli army the strongest army in the region, whereas it is incapable of stopping the humble capabilities of Hezbollah's resistance and other resistance factions. And there's two very significant developments that were in the last a few days from Hezbollah. They brought in new rockets. For example, you have the Jihad rocket, which has been used, the Jihad Mughniyya rocket. It has been used more in the last few days. We also have the Wabal rocket, which was used for the first time by Hezbollah's resistance. So it definitely seems that Hezbollah has a lot, has a basket of surprises and new weapons, types of rockets and different types of drones as well, which they up until now have not covered, uncovered yet. And this, of course, could prove in the upcoming days, weeks, and perhaps even months. If this does continue, we might be seeing more issues from Hezbollah's capabilities, while at the same time, the Israelis are only launching attacks against direct areas where there are civilians, of course, and this is something that Hezbollah said they will not tolerate.
All right. Thank you, Maryam. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. That was Maryam Saleh, our Beirut correspondent, joining us there from southern Lebanon. July the 20th marks the anniversary of Turkey's military operation into Cyprus that led to the division of the Mediterranean island into two halves. 50 years ago today, Turkish troops landed on Cyprus to presumably protect its Turkish Cypriot community following a Greek-backed coup that toppled the island's government. Hundreds died in fierce battles that erupted following the arrival of the Turkish troops. Conflict then resulted in the division of the island, and since then, northern third of the island has belonged to the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, while Greek Cypriots run the southern two-thirds. And despite diplomatic efforts, Cyprus remains partitioned into Greek and Turkish zones. Russia says it's shot down at least 26 Ukrainian drones over the southern region of Rostov as the two countries remain engaged in tit-for-tat cross-border attacks. In a social media post, the Rostov governor said Russia's air defense systems intercepted the drones before they could reach their intended targets. Vasily Gulubov added there were no casualties or damage as drones were down several hundred kilometers from the front lines. With financial and military backing from the U.S.-led NATO allies, Ukraine has increased its attacks on sensitive Russian infrastructure. Russia, however, has warned increased military aid from Western countries will only prolong this war and add to Ukrainian suffering. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. UNRWA said the cost of just clearing debris from Gaza will likely be between $500 million and $600 million. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. We'll be right back. Middle East Eye wrote, clearing the rubble left from the Zionist regime's sweeping bombardment of the Gaza Strip is expected to take 15 years and cost between $500 million and $600 million. The UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA, posted on X about the staggering cost and years needed for reconstruction, saying, "The debris are a potential threat and harmful." UNRWA said, "Debris poses a deadly threat for people in the Gaza Strip as it can contain unexploded ordnance and harmful substances," adding that it would take more than 100 trucks to clear the rubble. The values show how difficult it will be to rebuild Gaza, even as the child-killing regime of Israel continues to pummel the enclave. The Zionist regime dropped at least 70,000 tons of bombs on Gaza between October 7 and May 4th, surpassing the Second World War bombings in Dresden, Hamburg, and London combined, according to the Euromed Human Rights Monitor. UNRWA cited a report from the UN Environment Programme released in June, which said that 137,297 buildings had been damaged in Gaza, more than half the enclave's total. It would take sprawling landfill sites occupying between 250 and 500 hectares to dump the rubble, the report said. The report also said that the Zionist regime's offensive likely set the Gaza Strip back 44 years in terms of the development of healthcare, education, and wealth. The report found that explosive weapons used in the war have generated around 39 million tons of debris, with every square meter of Gaza littered with more than 107 kilograms of debris on average. It also found that water, sanitation and hygiene systems in Gaza are almost entirely defunct, with the Gaza Strip's 5 wastewater treatment plants shut down. UN Environmental Programme UNEP Executive Director Inger Andersen said, "All of this is deeply harming people's health, food security and Gaza's resilience." The Zionist regime's war is exacerbating an already deteriorating environment in the Gaza Strip, where over 92% of water was deemed unfit for human consumption in 2020. The UN report came as a result of a request from the Palestinian Environment Quality Authority in December, in which it called on UNEP to look into environmental damages in Gaza. Climate change and the Zionist regime's attacks on environmental infrastructure have long plagued Gaza and other parts of occupied Palestine. After the Nakba, which refers to the ethnic cleansing and destruction of Palestinian communities in 1948 by Zionist forces, the Jewish National Fund planted monoculture forests of pine trees, which destroy biodiversity and indigenous lands, often on the ruins of Palestinian villages. At least 38,664 Palestinians have been martyred and 89,097 wounded by the Zionist regime's genocide in the Gaza Strip since October 7, 2023. At least 80 Palestinians were martyred and 226 wounded by the Zionist regime forces in the past 24 hours, the Palestinian Health Ministry said recently. Meanwhile, Al Jazeera English said, in May, the UN Development Programme, UNDP, estimated that rebuilding Gaza's homes could take until 2040. Abdullah al-Darari, director of the Regional Bureau for Arab States at the UNDP, said, "The overall reconstruction of Gaza today, according to our estimate, will be between $40 billion and $50 billion at least." Al-Darari said, "We have not seen anything like this since 1945. Overall, the level of destruction is such that the UNDP estimated the Human Development Index in Gaza has regressed by 40 years. The index assesses factors including years of gains in schooling, education attainment, health and life expectancy at birth." Ad-Darari added, "All investments in human development for the last 40 years in Gaza have been wiped out. We are almost back in the 80s.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Four massacres within 24 hours, killing at least 81 civilians. The Israeli regime has ramped up its brutal aggression on Palestinians in the Gaza Strip over the past day. Once again, the genocide deniers are proven wrong. This is while the regime deliberately keeps undermining negotiations for a ceasefire plan aimed at ending the genocidal war. There are also reports of banned weapons, courtesy of the U.S., being used on Palestinians. Meanwhile, the Israeli regime's economy is falling apart, 40,000 business closures since October the 7th. The occupied West Bank also continues to suffer from death and destruction as a result of raids, illegal detentions, and property damage. All of this, and the U.S. continues to defend Israel, saying Israel has a right to defend itself. The Gaza Strip remains the only conflict in the world where people are not allowed to flee. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Kim Sherry is an activist and lawyer who joins us from London. Also joining us is Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria, who joins us from Manchester.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Kim Sharif, I'll start with you with another horrific set of data from the massacres that's taken place, four of them in the past 24 hours is what we have. Our correspondent on the ground has supported that, killing at least what we have, 81 civilians. The regime ramping up its brutal aggression in the Gaza Strip over the past 24 hours. What is your reaction to how we are still witnessing a genocide and the fact that you have some who are denying that a genocide is taking place?
Well, good evening to you both. Well, firstly, those who are denying the genocide have a political purpose for saying that, for doing that.
because it is their agenda, it is their objective for the existence and continuation of this illegal entity that is sitting there, despite the fact that it has no right to be there. In fact, ab initio, as I have said before, the Balfour Declaration was illegally handed over to the Zionists. And you need to listen to the presentations made by the Arab League barrister at the International Criminal Court, International Court of Justice, where he sends out the details of why this entity is illegal. And you can also, you need to go back in history as well and see how colonies have been made, like, for example, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, where massacres have been committed sustainably and consistently and without any mercy on the natives. The same policy has been imported to the Palestinians, unfortunately, who have been suffering a holocaust for the past 76 years, and it's ongoing. The horrific crimes being committed in Palestine today is a very, very dirty scar on the conscience of humanity. And those who are genocide deniers, they have a political reason for doing that, and they are known to be liars, non-compliant with international rules of law, non-compliant with international rules of engagement on any level. It's all about bullying and might is right, and complete and utter disregard to everything that we know as conscientiousness.
All right, Peter Ford, I need to ask you about these banned weapons reports that we are now hearing about more than before. One particular report indicating 320 cases of severe burns within 48 hours. This came from Gaza officials who are condemning the use of these banned weapons, courtesy of the USA. And what we understand, it's basically third-degree burns that are showing up, thermal weapons or chemical weapons, the source causing a chemical reaction with the skin, leads to chemical erosion of tissues, resulting in deadly burns within 27 hours or less. We heard these stories in one of the other wars also, Israeli wars that it had waged on the Gaza Strip. But this shouldn't be happening, should it?
Of course not. The scenes that we see from Gaza are heart-rending. It's almost impossible to watch. And this is partly because, as you mentioned, of the use of phosphorus bombs. These bombs that we're talking about almost certainly are phosphorus bombs, which are illegal under international law. They have certain uses which are allowed, but dropping them on people is definitely not allowed. But Israel has no care about international law. And frankly, we are wasting our time talking about international law here, because it's water off a duck's back. Israel, with its protection from the United States, laps at international law. And the international community is powerless against Israel as long as it's protected by America. In the end, what counts is the steadfastness, the determination, the courage of the people of Gaza and the military efforts of the resistance. That is all that counts.
Well, we are also seeing the Israeli regime suffering, Kim Sharif. And let's look at some of those ways that they are. Reports of shortages of tanks and ammunition have been cited by many sources. Insufficient for the onslaught. The shortages are such so that it's going to prevent this war from continuing, as they call it, the genocidal war. And you have even the Supreme Court that has been informed there in Israel of this because of so many tanks that were damaged. What are we looking at when it comes to this type of shortage and the fact that Israel is experiencing that? Are we looking at how the resistance is actually succeeding against the regime?
Well, of course it is. And the resistance action is a direct response to the failure of the world powers in upholding the rule of law. And therefore, if they say that might is right, so be it. The resistance forces have been taking steps to attack and defend the people of Palestine with all their might, even those who can't even actually afford to do that. For people like the Yemenis and the Lebanese and the Iraqis have been attacking. And as far as I'm aware, where Port of Eilat has been rendered bankrupt, and a lot of ships are having now to go via Africa to avoid the Red Sea Ansar Allah military operations. And of course, you know, if you say that you're going to apply one rule to one set of people and another rule to other or the rest of the world, then it means the rest of the world will have to get together and do something about it. And that's what the resistance is doing, and that's what is having an impact. What is unfortunate is that there is a need, an urgent need, for more countries to take urgent steps to boycott this vile regime, economically sanction it. Close down its shops, its embassies in their countries, cut ties with it, and it really needs to be to feel the impact more severely, because I have said before, I estimate that at least 500 people are being killed per day. I don't have figures to back that up. That is because the Zionist regime does not allow independent investigators from the UN, journalists and other people to come and do the figures. And the figures given by the Gaza Health Ministry is commonly dismissed as the Hamas figures, in order to play it down and make it seem like, you know, that's not true. Mm-hmm. The horror that is taking place in there is affecting us all. We are all being traumatized. The whole world is against it. It's only very few countries with power who are upholding it, and they need to be held to account also.
Sure. There was, since you've talked about how you don't have facts to back up with the figures you mentioned there, I'd like to ask you, Peter Ford, about this Lancet report that came out. It's about, I think, a couple of weeks old at this point. We're up to 180,000 may die as a result of this onslaught, to exceed 186,000, actually. And it found factors like diseases to lead to many more indirect deaths in the long run. And, of course, we're talking about, in addition to the so many thousands that are under the rubble. So that's a pretty big figure in a matter of 9 months. I think that is the largest figure in modern-day warfare, in terms of a war that has happened, to have so many lives lost. I mean, the Yemen war, I think, was 250,000 or so, if I'm not mistaken. It could be higher, but given the nine-month period, as opposed to the 9 years, and I'm just citing one example, the Yemen war, that's a pretty shocking figure.
Indeed, this report published in the Lancet magazine in London, a very prestigious medical magazine. It had a lot of coverage in the Western media because, of course, the finding that about 10% of the population of Gaza is either dead or dying is quite dramatic, and it's bound to have some impact. It will play into a debate which is now beginning to open up in Britain about arms, banning arms sales to Israel. This subject is becoming a hot potato right now with a new Labour government in place, which promised to publish the legal advice that its own legal that the government's legal experts were giving during the time of the previous administration. Now, that advice almost certainly, it was concealed, but now it will have to be published, that advice almost certainly said that killing 10% of Gaza's population with British weapons is not legal. And the new British government will be under immense pressure now to ban arms sales to Israel.
All right. You mentioned the Port of Eilat there, Kim Sharif, if I'm not mistaken. The Port of Eilat, in essence, has claimed bankruptcy, from what we understand, based on the report, at least, that I'm looking at. this came after months, obviously, of what we have seen to be the effective and successful Ansarullah blockade and attacks on Israeli-bound ships and vessels. At the same time, another report came out just days ago where it talked about how 46,000 Israeli businesses have been forced to shut down as a result of this onslaught, predicted to increase to 60,000 by the end of 2024. So Israel is suffering. We've talked so much about how the Gazans are suffering, but at the same time, Israel, out of its own doing, is doing something that is rupturing from within. 60,000 by the end of the year, businesses to be shut down. That's a lot. Do you think that Israel cares about the fact that it's going down a path that's leading to its destruction with the aim that it has of eliminating some Hamas leaders, perhaps, which is their goal, which they have not been able to do? In other words, is the cost worth it, that it may lead down to its destruction?
Well, absolutely not. Any sensible people, any sensible country will come to the conclusion that this is a non-starter, and what is in our best interest is to actually behave like normal human beings and show some civility. But they have failed to do that. The thing is, it seems to me that those who are backing it are the ones who are encouraging it and wanting it to continue. If you recall that the war on Yemen itself, the Yemenis were saying, Ansarullah were saying for a number of years that the aggression against them was in order to protect the Zionist regime because of that Red Sea crossing, clearly. And now that what they have been saying for years has materialized, in fact. And so the destiny of the Yemenis is very closely tied with the destiny of the Palestinians. Hence the involvement of Ansarullah in this scenario. And Ansarullah and Hezbollah and all the other resistance partners have made it very clear. As soon as the Zionist regime stops its campaign of extermination and genocide against the people of Palestine, they will also stop their attacks. So long as the military operation, the genocidal operation continues against the people of Palestine, they will continue. At the end of the day, it is very clear that not only have they lost financially, and they will continue to lose, I have no doubt in my mind, there will be much more greater losses for them that they will never be able to recoup. And that is a loss of reputation. The Zionist regime's mask of civilization, of democracy, of human rights, of all the things that we all love and cherish has now been unmasked. You know, they have now become, unfortunately, the very people that they had been running away from after the Second World War. They have started, they've been doing crimes perhaps worse than the crimes of those people.
Right.
People who say this are often attacked and told they are anti-Semite. On the contrary, I listened to the lectures and discussions of many great, respectable Jewish people who are saying exactly the same thing. Norm Finkelstein, Andrew Finstein, and Ilan Pape, a lot of these people are saying what I am saying. So it's not anti-Semite to say that these people
sure.
are behaving worse than the Nazis.
Well, Peter Ford, let's take a look at what Israel, the regime, is facing and what it's involved in. Basically, if I'm correct, we are looking at how it is involved in four fronts. One is the Ansarullah movement, the army, in essence, where it is now also conducting, as we're seeing, more joint raids with Iraq's Islamic Resistance, for example, targeting Haifa Port. We also know that it's involved with Hezbollah, the skirmishes that are happening on a daily basis for quite some time, obviously with the resistance there in the Gaza Strip, and also from time and again, though not as often, the Palestinian resistance groups inside the occupied territories. We can mention the Lion's Den. Why is it that Israel feels that it can actually sustain all these fronts unless it's a miscalculation because they haven't all acted against Israel at the same time?
Well, we have to remind ourselves that the main reason this war is continuing is simply Netanyahu, the political future of one man. and his wish to stay out of jail, because it's very likely when the war ends that he will be held accountable for all Israel's failures and will go, as well as for corruption, and will go to jail. Therefore, the question has to be, is Israeli public opinion agreeing with Netanyahu? And I'm sorry to say, it is. The Israeli public is not feeling enough pain, despite the economic and security problems that have been mentioned. The Israeli public is not feeling enough pain. The pain in Israel cannot be compared in any way to the pain the people of Gaza are feeling. And therefore, the government of Israel under Netanyahu feels able to continue to sustain this low-intensity conflict. It's not like the bombs were raining down on Haifa, not yet, anyway. And this, I'm afraid that Netanyahu can continue to hold this balance for quite some time.
Okay. Let me ask you, Kim Sheriff, about another slow motion, violation that's taking place, and that's in the occupied West Bank. We are witnessing, so far, over 500 deaths and an awful number of Palestinians who have been detained, about 9,600. We're looking at almost 10,000 of them. And, of course, this is a result of the raids that are happening, along with the violence that erupts. What are we looking at when it comes to the occupied West Bank itself, Kim Sharif? What are we looking at that to increase as time is going on, which obviously is on that track?
Highly likely. I mean, what's happening in the West Bank and the conditions and the treatment of the detainees is just unspeakable horror. I mean, the raids, that the way they carry out the raids, the IOF is absolutely abominable. It's demonic. I mean, today I was listening to Middle East Eye about the case of a Down syndrome young man who had dogs unleashed on him, and the dogs mauled him to death in front of his family. A Down syndrome young man. And then you have the case of Hind, of course, a six-year-old who had hundreds of bullets thrown at her. This is the way the IOF behaved towards the Palestinian people, whether in the West Bank or the Gaza. And in detention, they get tortured in such ways that is so horrible even to try and relate, because I feel emotionally traumatized just listening to their cases. It's disgraceful that human beings in the world think that it is okay to aid and abet the crimes, the horrific crimes of this horrific criminal regime. Yes, the detainees in their centers, they get tortured by being beaten in their genitalia. Some of them have problems continuing. And every human rights organization that seek to defend them or speak up for them is instantly accused of being a terrorist and banned and harassed and hounded. Lawyers and non-lawyers and medicals, either journalists, either killed or accused of being terrorists and so forth. It's disgraceful. I am really shocked. I am really shocked to be alive today in this world today,
sure,
to be witnessing these horrific crimes, to be honest.
Indeed. Well, Peter Ford, I'd like to draw your attention to an announcement that the U.S. made. This happened, an announcement that was actually made in the course of 3 days repeatedly. But the U.S. said that it will now reactivate sending the bombs to Israel, 500-pound bombs that have been held up since May. It said it was over the concerns of the Israeli regime invading Rafah, if you recall that. Now, when that announcement was made, just about 3 or 4 days later, you had that tragedy happen at the Al-Mawasi area, which is supposed to be the humanitarian zone. You had over 90 that were killed. And one of the bombs, the types of bombs that were found there, is the JDAM, it's called, which comes into either 1,000 or 2,000 pound weight, 450 to 900 kilograms payload. And it was said the fragment is compatible with the BLU-109 bunker buster warhead also. So my point being is, if that's a result what happened at that camp, then that's really truly shocking. And if it's not, it's still the question being, how could the U.S. Allow this shipment to take place? And how is it that there's any logic behind using these 500-pound or 1,000-pound bombs? They flatten entire neighborhoods.
The United States cannot say no to Israel. It's important to understand the power relationship here. The power is with Israel, not with the United States. The United States, because of the way the Israelis control Congress, obeys Israel. That's the direction of power. The United States is not able, or the U.S. administration is not able for any long period of time to deny any Israeli request. But sometimes they go through the motions, they pretend to be putting pressure on Israel, but it never lasts, and their bluff is always called. We will remember that the Americans said no entry into Rafah by the Israeli army can be permitted. Well, what did Israel do? The army walked straight into Rafah. And what did America do? Nothing. And this is now being quietly forgotten. The ultimatum to Israel was a bluff. And it's the same with the temporary denial of these very heavy bombs. And this is not going to change.
All right. Thank you for that. Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria. Thank you. And Kim Sheriff, activist and lawyer from London. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mikko Vitahue and the team. It's goodbye.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman, Allah, who is Al-Mannan.
La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Ata, the host of this program. Sheikh Rouhani is the guest speaker for today's episode. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
All right, Sheikh Rouhani, for today's episode, we want to talk about the ilm, the knowledge of an infallible Imam, Imam al-Ma'sum, especially Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. So many questions are asked regarding the tragedy of Karbala and the ilm of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam before this incident or this tragic event take place in the history of Islam. Some questions are posed. First of all, did Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam know that this will happen to him and his family? If yes, why did he choose to go towards Karbala and Kufa, and on the way all his family members and his faithful companions be slaughtered? This is the first part of the question. The second part, we'll get to the ilm of the Imam regarding the region, I mean Karbala or Nineveh. Did Imam have enough knowledge about this region before he gets over there or not? Because some people might say that even Imam bought some of these regions and pieces of lands from Bani Asad or something like that, the tribe that were living over there. First of all, let's start with the ilm of the Imam. What is the range of the ilm of the Imam, Sheikh?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. If I understood correctly your question, it was this, that if Imam Hussein knew,
yes,
that he will be martyred in Karbala, then why did he approach toward,
yes,
Karbala? Yeah?
Based on his knowledge and ilm, he knew that he will be martyred. Mm-hmm. So why did he choose this path?
Yeah, it is a very significant question. You know that, of course, first of all, Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam had this duty, had this religious responsibility to safeguard the ummah of his grandfather, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, to save them against the enemies, against the evil rulers, against oppression, to protect them against hellfire, and to guide them into the right path, because this is the duty of the Imam of the time,
yes,
after the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Now the question is that how should this duty and responsibility of the Imam be fulfilled at the time of the Imam?
Yes.
What are some of the means through which Imam can fulfill this duty, this responsibility? Historically talking, we know, our brothers and sisters know, that Abu Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salatu wasalam, when he refused to pay allegiance to Yazid, he was forced to leave Medina. So he left Medina. Though he called upon the people of Medina, upon the companions of the Prophet ﷺ, reminded them a lot of the problems that Muslims suffering at that time, but no one listened to the Imam alayhi salatu wasalam, unfortunately. Then he moved to Mecca. In Mecca also, he made lots of speeches. He presented lectures, presentations to the companions of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. If you refer to the khutbah of Mina, you see there about Abdullah alayhi salatu wasallam mentioned the fada'il of Amir al-Mu'mineen as the Imam after the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and then the fada'il of the Ahlul Bayt, and then the duty of the ulama, the scholars. He called upon them that we have this responsibility to guide the ummah,
yes,
to help the ummah. But unfortunately, the companions, the elite, the people did not listen, did not care about the sayings of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, the khutbah of Abu Abdullah alayhi salatu wasalam. When he moved through Karbala and Kufa again, he reminded lots of people met lots of people, spoke to the lots of people. But unfortunately, the people, because Muawiyah and Yazid were the rulers at that time, and they actually, their ideology, their ideas, their beliefs were something predominant over the Muslim Ummah.
All right.
That's why the people did not care about Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. Otherwise, due to they fear Muawiyah and Amawids, or they actually were misguided by the propagations, preaching of the teachings of Amawids to the people.
Mm-hmm.
Then now the question is that, okay, if that is the case, if speaking, talking to the people does not do anything to these people,
yes,
what should the Imam do? This is a very important question. What should the Imam do?
Mm-hmm.
Imam has this responsibility to guide the people because he's the light of guidance. Then the people, when